This episode brought to you by Origins, technology for today's lenders. Before we get started, a quick word from our sponsor, Community Financial's present CEO, Tansley Stern's new podcast, Despite Impossible. Now on to the show.
Hey everybody, Mike Lawson here with CU Broadcast. Welcome back to our continued coverage of the 2023 CUNA GAC. My time is flying, isn't it?
It is.
Gosh. And look who we have in the studio lounge, NCUA Chairman Todd Harper. Todd, nice to see you again.
Great to see you. Always a pleasure. Good.
Well, thank you. Likewise, sir. How's the conference going for you so far? You're probably being pulled in 100 different directions.
I've been pulled in 100 directions. I started yesterday, I think it was at 8:30, and I went all the way until 10:30 last night.
Yeah, that was a lot of our schedule.
And then I went home, and I actually prepped for today.
Oh,
so it's a little exhausting.
Yeah. I think we can sleep maybe Thursday or Friday sometime like that, maybe the weekend.
I got to go back to running an agency.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. Yes. You have a job to do. That too. All right. Well, hey, so any takeaways from the conference so far? Any highlights?
I think there's a lot of energy here.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen so much energy at the CUNA GAC as I have this year.
Yep.
Second of all, there are a lot of questions. People are having, the economy is in a sort of different place than anybody mm-hmm. has expected for a while. Mm-hmm. Where are we going? What are we doing here? What are the threats? Cybersecurity, it's out there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hearing definitely some discussion on that.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you brought up cybersecurity because it's very refreshing to have an NCUA board that is so on top of things like that, especially like the technology, because I talked with Kyle yesterday about cryptocurrency and all that, all the digital assets and stuff. But you guys have been really, I don't know, very forthright in being active in those areas.
Well,
so I think it's very refreshing.
You know, I want to make sure that the credit union system isn't the Achilles heel by which we have a bigger systemic problem in the financial system.
Yeah.
And anything we can do to improve cybersecurity, we ought to be doing. Our new cybersecurity incident reporting rule is a great example.
Yeah, was it 72 hours or something like that? Yeah.
We give 72 hours.
Yeah.
I think it's really important to note, we are working to coordinate our rule with what other rules are going to be coming out from the Department of Homeland Security.
Okay.
So they're probably also, they have a requirement by statute that they've got to do a rule and it's got to be done within 72 hours
mm-hmm.
for
mm-hmm.
critically important entities. And
certainly
financial services is a highly critically important entity. And so we're ahead of the curve that we got our rule out before they did.
Okay.
And we are coordinating that we gave a little extra time than banks did
because
36 hours just didn't seem long enough.
Yeah, exactly. Can you share with me real quick the field of membership reforms? Because there's some little bit of, there's a few changes there as well
as
far as remote workers and things like that.
Yeah, there's a great question. So we, at our last board meeting, took up our field of membership proposed
mm-hmm.
rule to make some tweaks within the field of membership to make the federal charter more competitive with state charters overall. And one of those tweaks is, as you just pointed out, was that currently, the way our rules are written is a credit union can have that has a field of membership based on a community charter can have people actually no it's a single common charter it can have a field of membership based on current workers
mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
their spouses and families that work at our headquarters
right
there
in
the community.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's changed with the pandemic.
A little bit.
We know that people are no longer necessarily working right next to where their business
mm-hmm.
is or in the
mm-hmm.
same community. In some cases, they may be coming in and out of that community
on
a regular basis. In some cases, they may be working purely remotely at all times. And so this was an easy tweak for us to make to modernize our rules.
I hear you, but I think it's going to open up a whole new world, as they would say, for members to come in and join.
Potentially.
Yeah.
Now, again, this is a proposed rule. We've got to go through. We've got to get the comment. We got to adjudicate the comments. Then we can do the final rule. But I'm fairly confident we'll move ahead as quickly as possible.
We can dream, can't we? All right.
Absolutely.
All right. So I know you're going to be on stage a couple of times, if not already. So share with me some of the messages that you're conveying to the attendees here.
I was on the CUNA main stage just yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
I really focused in on three risks that are so important.
Mm-hmm.
First is interest rate risk, second is liquidity risk, third
mm-hmm.
is cybersecurity
risk.
On that interest rate risk, very few people are around today that were around the last time we've had an interest rate environment like
You're
this.
Right about that.
And
and just the
sharp increase in such a short amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we have seen credit unions have been somewhat slow in some cases to reprice. There was an article in the Wall Street Journal late last year touting the fact that the bank average auto loan rate was 8.5% and the credit unions it was 5.9%. And everybody was saying, see, credit unions, that's the difference at work. And I'm looking at it and I'm paid to worry, Mike. My job is to worry, and I'm saying, oh God, interest rate risk, are they properly pricing? And as I've talked to examiners, some credit unions are out there still pricing at 1.99 or 2.99% when the market has moved on and they really should be making those adjustments to their system along the way. So interest rate risk, we also put out recent guidance on that. Just because you have high interest rate risk doesn't necessarily mean that there should be a document of resolution attached to it, especially if you've got systems in place and you're managing that risk. You know that it's a high risk and you've got, you know, you're managing it. Second risk, as I talked about yesterday, was liquidity risk, Mike. We watched early on as rates rose, and I started to watch multiple credit unions with more than $1 billion in assets get caught in a liquidity vice. They were doing some originate to sell loans, and they got those loans on their books, but they didn't get those loans off the books before the interest rates had shifted. And so suddenly they have these loans on their books that they don't want to sell for a loss. And they are bumping up against where their overall liquidity levels can. And so they've got to make sure that they're doing a good job in managing that liquidity. We're working with those credit unions now, but if I could put in a plug on, in particular, liquidity.
Sure.
For credit unions above $250 million, Mike, those credit unions already need to have access to a federal backstop of a liquidity facility. Credit unions can choose whether that's the NCUA's central liquidity facility or the Federal Reserve's discount window, and in some cases they choose both. But there is no requirement for credit unions under $250 million. We had temporary authority that Congress gave that allowed the corporate credit unions to temporarily step in and be an agent for their members to the CLF. And for a subset of their members. And so the corporate stepped in early on in the crisis, and they did it all the way until the end of last year. And then that authority expired. And so now 3,300 some credit unions lost their access to the CLF. In order to have that access to the CLF, they need to join and becoming a member. Easiest way to do that is to go to www.ncua.gov/CLF, and we've updated our forms, we've updated information on there. You want to make sure that your liquidity is fixed before your pipes freeze, because once your pipes freeze, it's kind of hard to unfreeze them. And that can create a whole bunch of problems. And then cybersecurity. If there's one thing that keeps me awake at night, it's what we don't know. And cybersecurity is certainly an area where we have been working to improve our examination systems. Credit unions this year have started with the new information security exam program, which is flexible. We have a one for small credit unions, and then we've got one for credit unions from 50 million to say about 250 million, and then above 250 million, we have an even more complex. We've also had for some time our automated cybersecurity evaluation tool, which is a series of about 500 questions. You don't have to answer all 500 at once.
Todd.
No, you don't need to answer all 500 at once. But you go in, you do 10, 15, 20.
Okay.
You see what you're doing, right, and you see what you need to work on. You go and work on those things.
Okay.
And then you come back to the tool and you say, I'm ready for the next level.
Okay.
So in other words, it scales as you grow the system overall.
Well, that's smart. Okay.
Yeah. And
initially, I'm like, oh my goodness.
I know. Nobody wants to sit and do the SATs for their cybersecurity exam.
Got that right.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So that's the thing. And then lastly, if I could, one of the things that's really near and dear to my heart is what we've been doing for minority depository institutions, Mike. I became chair, as you may know, 2 years ago of the Federal Financial Institutions Examination Council, and that's all of the banking regulators. We come together, state and federal level, and we sit down, and I've been chairing that group, and when I took over, I asked our task force on supervision that, again, got representatives of all the agencies, what can we do to support MDIs as part of the exam process? And I got a really interesting answer. The FDIC, the OCC, and the Federal Reserve didn't compare MDIs to non-MDIs in their peer metrics. They compared them to MDIs. So, and what do? We've got 500 plus MDIs. We have more than MDIs than all of the other regulators combined.
Okay.
And we were comparing apples. apples to oranges. Right, we were taking our MDIs and comparing them to non-MDIs. Well, you know what? These MDIs here have a different business model, need to respect that business model. Yes, they may have higher expenses. You know why they have higher expenses? Mm-hmm. Because they're working with their members who may have delinquencies. You know why those members are delinquencies? Because they are at the lower end, and this is what they actually do. Those loans don't necessarily ultimately get charged off, but there are some higher expense ratios that you need to expect. Mm-hmm. Why are you comparing these two to one another?
Yeah.
So starting this year, we now have the new MDI exam program where MDIs will be compared on the peer metrics to MDIs, not to MDIs.
Well,
and I'm really thrilled.
Yeah, you want apples to apples, not apples to oranges.
Exactly.
Last thing before I let you go, you're going to be at the African American Creighton Coalition Hall of Fame event tonight. Can you share with us what you're going to say there real quick?
Well, first of all, it's an honor, and I still can't quite believe that I'm going to be inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Congrats.
It's affirming for all that I have strove to do in my life and what I've done to support, and probably has only enhanced my commitment to working on support for MDIs. I think the biggest thing that I'll talk tonight is the power of one.
Mm-hmm.
There is a woman, Dr. Sybil Sybil Jordan Hampton, mm-hmm. sorry, I was inverting the names there.
Okay.
And Dr. Hampton was in the second class at Little Rock Central. And as she was an African, she was not part of the Little Rock Nine, but she was the class that came after Little Rock Nine. And needless to say, she did not have a good experience going to high school. And she got that invite to go to her 20th year reunion,
mm-hmm.
Or as she saw it, going back to the scene of the crime. And her parents said, "You're going." And she agreed with her parents, and she went, and she got there, and she was once again shunned by her classmates. And then came time for the banquet after the reception, and this one guy walked up to her, and he said, "I was the one that insisted that you get an invite, and nobody's going to sit with you, but I will."
Wow.
And so that man sat down with the table with Dr. Hampton and her parents, and that one single action, that power of one person being an ally, allowed other people to come up and to say, "Hey, I regret the way I treated you in high school," or "I so admire your bravery for having done what you did for 4 years.
Yeah.
And we all need to be the power of one. We need to, in the credit union system, and the credit union system is exactly where this fits with the cooperative principles.
Completely.
It's the power of one. When you see somebody who is suffering, when you see somebody who is unloved, when you see somebody who is hurting, you go and you care for them and you support them. Reach out to them. Mm-hmm. Be that power of one, because being that power of one, you give space to others to do the same.
Yeah, that's a goosebump story, Todd. I mean, that makes the hair in your arms raise up. Wow, very cool.
Yep.
Always a pleasure, sir.
Absolutely.
Again, I know you have a tight schedule. We always appreciate your time, and it's a highlight of my coverage of GAC as well, having you in here and sitting on the couch for a few minutes.
Absolutely, and always be safe, be well.
And you as well, sir. All right, Todd, thank you so much. Well done.
This episode brought to you by Origins, technology for today's lenders. A quick word from our sponsor, Community Financial's present CEO, Tansley Stern's new podcast, Despite Impossible.